All right. Well, thank you for coming. Just a little bit. I'm glad that I'm able to chair this workshop. I found it, this subject was very, very interesting. The first time I ever heard a workshop on it was at the World Convention in Baltimore back in like 94. Was that right? Like that? And it was very, very interesting, and, you know, I just didn't know where we came from, you know, and I thought it was, it kind of tied a lot of loose ends together, and it kind of gave me some clarity of why we're here, really, why I'm here. And that's why I thought it was such a cool topic for a workshop at our convention. I mean, I don't know if this has ever been done in a regional convention before or not, so it's very nice to have you guys show up. First off, I'll start off with Bobby H.
I'm an addict. My name's Bobby. And I'm terribly nervous. I haven't been in front of a mic in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in a long time. Feels good and feels scary at the same time. Looks like Kermit came well prepared for his part of this workshop today. Unfortunately, your first speaker did not. I usually try to pray a little bit before I get in front, talk in front of Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And I usually don't try to plan out what I'm going to say or anything like that. You know, I usually try to let God share what he would have on me to say to you. I try to let him do it, and I've done that this morning. I'm going to try to bring you, as far as I know, the history of this region, basically from memory. Unfortunately, a lot of other things in Narcotics Anonymous, some of our record keeping is not the best in the world, and I'm just like everybody else. I did have a thing that we put together when we put the bid together for the World Convention that had a chronological history, and unfortunately we did not keep a copy of the bid and all that record, I guess, somewhere, I don't know where it's at, but I looked through my stuff and I couldn't find it. Anyway, I would have been better prepared had I done that. So I'm going to do this from memory as best I can. And contrary to popular opinion, I have not been around since my Narcotics Anonymous founding. You know, and I did not get clean in the Show Me region. You know, I got clean in what is now the, I guess, Indiana region. And I came here in February of 1984. I moved to St. Louis. My understanding is it's like most of the areas in Narcotics Anonymous, along around 1981, we began the discussions about the basic text, and with those discussions, it seemed like NA took off. And I believe that from what I've been told, that there were meetings in St. Louis as early as 1981 and in Joplin, Missouri as early as 1981. I believe those were the only meetings in what is now the Show Me region, which was at that time the Mid-America region. And it encompassed five states, Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Missouri. And I think in August of 93, the summer of 93, some addicts from St. Louis, and one of the things, I guess I should back up there a little bit and, you know, give tribute to those folks who came before us. I think it would be unwise for us to forget that most of us in our early recovery attended Alcoholics Anonymous. We owe a great debt to those people who taught us how to organize Narcotics Anonymous and how to do the things that we did. So a lot of the things that we did were a direct result of our experience in Alcoholics Anonymous and the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that the way we do things, if you look back through the history of this region and other regions, is a direct result of the service structure of AA in those communities. The other thing that I'd like to say is there's an awful lot of people, addicts, that were in these rooms in the regional service meetings and area service meetings throughout the years and are no longer with us. That we all, where they are today, I have no idea, but we do owe a great debt of service to those folks too. Some of them were here longer than others. Some of them have chose to use. Some of them have gone on to other things. You know, but we, so not one person or any group of people are directly responsible for the growth of this fellowship. I think as Kermit will share a little bit later, what really happened around 1982 through 1984 with the basic text was getting written, and it came out in early 1984, and that's when the fellowship just exploded. And I was real fortunate to arrive in St. Louis in February of 1984, 1 week shy of my second year cleaning, I tried to notice. And was real fortunate to be one of those big fish in a small pond, you know, in that I had a couple years clean in a fellowship that was brand new. Not brand new, there was probably 4 or 5 meetings a week in St. Louis at that time. And in the southwest corner of the state, in Joplin and the Ozark area, there was probably, I know there was at least one group with several meetings in that group, Fifth Tradition Group in Joplin. And in August of 1983, some addicts from those two areas got together at a place called the St. Patrick's Center down in St. Louis, downtown St. Louis. And they, as usual, we were bitching about, you know, what we had to do to keep the fellowship alive, and driving to Lincoln, Nebraska wasn't on the high on our agenda to do at that time. You know, it was 12 hours or 15 hours drive to in between regional service meetings for a lot of us. And we decided that, well, they decided, I wasn't there at the time, but they decided that it might be a cool idea if we had our own region. And so it was decided at that meeting to form the Show Me region, and at that time there were two areas. Remember coming to St. Louis in 84 and being a part of a regional service meeting in January of 85 in Lindenwood College in St. Charles, Missouri. And it wasn't by choice. We were told, you know, you guys have got the regional, you need to plan for it. So a bunch of us got together and planned what I believe now, what I thought then was the beginning of Narcotics Anonymous. I believe now it was a stabilization of what we had going on at that time. And it was attended by probably close to 100 addicts, which was a lot of addicts at that point in time. And from there, I think Little Egypt attended their next regional service meeting in Joplin. That's when the third area of this region came about. And from there, Metro St. Charles, I think, broke off from St. Louis shortly thereafter and formed their own area. Now, a lot of this, you know, we did because, and I'm going to be frank about it, because we didn't know any better way of doing things at the time. Personally, I look back on it, and I'm not so sure we made the right decisions a lot of times. But as I believe that as Narcotics Anonymous groups and areas grow along spiritual lines, just as surely as addicts grow along spiritual lines. And we in this region are not any different than any other region in that, you know, as we grew in spirit by ourselves, as ourselves, you know, we grew in spirit as regions. And now, we did what we had to do, you know. It's not something I look back on with some of the things that I did personally, and that some of the areas did, you know. And what I'm talking about is that there was a lot of bitterness because the areas breaking off and forming their own areas and thinking that growth was good, that change was good. And as I look back on it now, I'm not so sure that all that change was good for us, but we did it nonetheless. Now, and I think Metro East come in shortly thereafter and broke off, and then there was another area named Esperanza that was in the southwest corner of St. Louis. It seemed like St. Louis was scattered at that point, and it took a long, long time for us to regain a trust with the St. Louis area because of the things that happened during that time. They felt like that some of us got some clean time and, we abandoned them after they gave us what we had. And in some way now I can look back on it and say I kind of agree with that, that that's really what happened. But in any case, we moved on and the Springfield area was formed, and there was an area called Boone area in Columbia and the Jefferson City area, and those two eventually, they broke apart and they eventually came back to what we're in now, which is now the mid-Missouri area. And Kansas City, which chose to stay with Mid-America for a long time, eventually decided they would join with Show Me also, when it became the United Kansas City area. And then somewhere during that period of time, the Quincy area was formed, which made our 12 areas that we have now, I think it is. No. Anyway, I think another important event that happened to us around 85 or 86 was we had gotten together and went down to New Orleans for the World Convention. And we just all thought that was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And we knew that, it went somewhere. Anyway, we thought we would put a bid together for the World Convention. And we did so. The only problem with it is that we didn't even start on it until after the bids were already due. And, as like everything else, we went about things ass fashion, but we did what God would want us to do anyhow. And this convention is a result of a screwed up bid for the world. And so we came in the back door. We wanted to do a world like all that. We wanted to do a world convention before we could do it, before we did a regional. We figured that when we found out that our bid wasn't going to be accepted by the world, we decided, well, we got all this information together, we might as well have a convention of our own. And in 1986 was the first world convention, Show Me convention. I don't know why, this convention hadn't grown that much in numbers. We had close to 500 people at the Smyrna One at Henry VIII Hotel in St. Louis. And it was a trip because none of us knew what we were doing, at all. It set the stage for a lot of growth in St. Louis, and the Show Me region, because this is a celebration of our recovery, and it brought people from all over our region together in one place, not to set and debate whether or not where we were going to sit at, and not to set and debate, if we were going to have smoking in the room or if we were going to have coffee or not. We came as a celebration of our recovery, and I think that was a significant event in this region with our first regional convention. And we did another thing that I think was important for our fellowship's growth, is that we rotated the regional meetings, and we've had some doozies. In that process, there was the school, there was two schools of thought on that. One of them would be that if we centralized the regional service committee meetings, then nobody would have to drive long distances. The other school of thought was that if we rotated the regionals, then all the communities would get the experience. People come from out of town who had a little bit of clean time. And I don't know if either argument was truly ever proven, but I know that we traveled long distance in this region, and a lot of people in this fellowship spent a lot of their own money. And I think Uzman said it from the podium last night, you know, this shouldn't be a thankless program. Those who dedicated themselves over the years and spent their own money to travel hours and hours and hours and give up vacations and give up, you know, days of pay and stuff to come to the regional service meetings long enough to keep it alive long enough so those others could come behind us and do what we're doing today. You know, I don't choose to look back at those things. Yeah, I've heard it said in Narcotics Anonymous that, you know, I wish we could get back what we had back here. You know, I remember it being like this, you know, and I was so unified in this and that. I can tell you, I don't ever want to go back there. I'll take what we got today in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, as bad as it may seem sometimes, I don't want to ever go back anywhere. I always want to be going forward in this fellowship. And I hope this fellowship always goes forward and doesn't leave. It's important to close the door on the past, to keep the window open. It's important to look back at our literature and look back at the things that we've done and hopefully learn from our mistakes, but I don't think that I want to go back to what we were doing, to camping out in cow pastures and meeting in barns for the regional service committee and meeting wherever we could get a place back in the days when Narcotics Anonymous wasn't well liked and didn't have a good name as far as hotels and stuff. You know, we've come a long way in that respect, and that hotels buy for our business now instead of us going to them and begging them to let us have our conventions and our meetings at them. So I don't ever want to go back to those days where we weren't well-liked and well-established. We take a back seat to no organization in this fellowship today. Yeah. And hotels like downtown St. Louis, they've been over backwards for us to bring the world there, you know, because of the business and what we've established over the years, it's some credibility. And our meetings today, we went from those couple of meetings in St. Louis and at least two or three meetings in the early part, early 80s, to I counted the other day in a meeting directory in St. Louis, but there's like 105 meetings in the metropolitan St. Louis area alone today, and countless, and I don't know, I haven't meeting directories of all the other areas, but there's probably, you know, thousands of meetings and a couple of thousand meetings in the Shelby region today. You know, and every corner of this region is well established as far as the service structure. And I can mention names and people, and I could tell you stories about some of the things we did and some of the things we struggled with, but I think what was suffice to say is that we desperately wanted another way of life. You know, most of us who were early in recovery were going to Alcoholics Anonymous knew that we needed something bigger. We needed a fellowship of our own. And we needed literature that we could hang on to, and we needed a language that we could talk that would fit us, you know. And we dedicated ourselves to that end result, you know. And it didn't matter that, it just didn't seem to matter for us that a lot of us were broke, and some of us were more fortunate than others to be. Some of us had cars and you know, enough gas money to get us there, you know, and that's the way it was. And we didn't, and I don't remember ever anybody telling me no when I asked them to go with me. And go with me here, or could I go with them there, or whatever. Now, there's some people in the room that's been, and that's another significant thing, is that if they ask where the old timers are, they're in this room today. Now, we've not gone anywhere. A lot of us haven't gone anywhere. You know, we're still here. You know, we're still behind the scenes sponsoring people and doing things for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, it seems like I've been involved in A from the day I walked through the doors. And I hope that in some respects that I always will be. I don't want to take any more time, because Kermit looks like he's well prepared to give you a good talk on the other part of this workshop. I hope I've enlightened you a little bit about what it was like for us and what it was like for this region. You should be, those who belong to this region should be very proud. You know, we are well established at the World Service Conference as a region who fulfills its obligations to the conference and fulfills its obligation to the rest of the world in Narcotics Anonymous through our financial, for our fund flow. You know, we're one of the regions that give a significant amount of money to the World Service Conference every year, and we always have. We fulfilled our responsibilities to Narcotics Anonymous on a daily basis. Now, yeah, we've had problems. We've had theft of thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, through over our years. Now, but we've maintained and we've held in there. We should be very proud of this convention and very proud of Narcotics Anonymous and Michelle McGree. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, I'm very pleased to have Kermit O. from Alabama.
My name is Kermit. I'm an addict. Clean today through the grace of God and Narcotics Anonymous. Real honored to talk about the history of Narcotics Anonymous. It's like, you know, whenever I'm asked to do something like that, I go like, me? In a few months, I'll be celebrating 18 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm just starting to believe that I'm an old-timer. You know, because all the people I know have 25 and 28 and 36, you know, and that's an old talk, you know. Thank you for that talk. That was really nice. You know, that's one of the things that I love about listening to NA history. It's not just dates and timelines and stuff like that. It's people and it's feelings, you know. I like to start this talk. I promised Dennis I wouldn't talk all the way over here, talk in front of the mic. With something I got, I picked this up in Israel, an NA member there gave it to me. And what it is it's a copy of Bill Wilson's original 12 Steps. What happened was Bill Wilson was one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, which in fact was formed 2 days ago in 1939. It was June 10th. Well, he wrote all the literature for AA, and then he handed it over to 100 alcoholics who had been sober for 1 year, and they grew conscience to it. And he woke up out of a dream one night and wrote these 12 steps out. And they're pretty much the same, but there's a couple of differences that are really cool in here. One of those is in step 7, it says, humbly on our knees, asked him to remove our shortcomings, holding nothing back. And later on, the part that I really like is in the 12th step. It says, having had a spiritual experience as a result of this course of action, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in our affairs. See, what that told me was that Bill Wilson understood that once you have a spiritual awakening, you'd be of service to anybody. Yeah. To be of service to anybody. And those 100 AA members modified that to carry the message to alcoholics. So, of course, when NA came on, our primary focus was already set, and that we were going to carry the message to addicts. We talk about in our literature that NA, as we know, it started in 1953. We chose that reference because all the NA groups that we know are traced back to this one group in 1953 in California. But there was Narcotics Anonymous many years before that. And we chose the phrase NA as we know it to describe the NA that we have today. In about 1945, I don't have my date timeline with me, so you have to excuse me. I like to tell them to put the label on the tape, NA history as Kermit sees it. And then Dennis says, as Kermit thought he saw it, which is probably much more accurate. But there was a guy in Montgomery, Alabama, and his name was Houston Sewell, and he was an AA member, and he had a friend that was a morphine addict, and he was trying to help him get clean using 12 steps. Well, his friend never got clean, and Houston moved to a place called Lexington, Kentucky. Well, in Lexington, in the late 40s, early 50s, it was the only place in America that you could go to detox. And what it was the federal detox facility in Lexington, Kentucky, in the penal institution. And basically the only people that went there were people who'd been in the prison system. And he went there and connected with a guy named Dr. Vogel, and Dr. Vogel was running the program, and explained to him about that there was this 12-step program that could be modified for addicts. So in the early 40s, they started something in Lexington, and I believe the name was Addict Anonymous, and it later got changed around. There was a guy from New York, good addict, his name was Danny Carlson, and he went through there 9 times, right? Now, this isn't the kind of detox that we're used to, you know, with the nice beds and everything, you know. This was like work on the farm and sweat it out and, you know, have a lot of counseling and probably a lot of hardcore confrontal therapy. But he also got to go to these meetings, these 12-step meetings. And on his ninth turn through Lexington, it was about the end of 1949, Danny Carlson surrendered. And he went back to New York City, and in 1950, he started something called Narcotics Anonymous. And he started meetings there, and he even started doing H&I meetings in the tombs at Rikers Island. And around that same time, there was a young priest named Father Dan Egan, and he was in New York. He found himself in New York at the beginning of his ministry, not knowing anything. And a young girl came up to the church, and she was sweating, and she was sick, and, you know, she said she needed help, and he didn't know what was wrong with her, and she came, you know, he asked her to come back the next day, and she came back the next day, and she was looking fine, and he couldn't figure out what this miraculous change was. Well, she copped out, but he began to minister to addicts, and it became a lifelong obsession with him, well, obsession or whatever, ministry. That's a negative term, and especially women addicts in New York. And Father Dan got hooked up with Dan Carlson, and someone wrote a book on his life, and it's called The Junkie Priest, and if you go to old bookstores and ask around, you can find there's copies of these, there's paperback copies, there's hardback copies. In here there's a chapter, and it's called Wednesday Night at the Y. And it talks about a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in, like, 1951. And it talks about a meeting room and people coming in and the Serenity Prayer sitting on the table. And this was, like, 2 years before NA, as we know it, got started. What happened to that Narcotics Anonymous group? Well, the traditions hadn't been written. And this is one of the interesting things. The traditions in AA hadn't been written until about 1953. So it seems that God was working, you know, around the same time that addicts were working, you know, to bring something together. The they set up a board of trustees for this Narcotics Anonymous, and no addicts were allowed to be on it. So, you know, Father Dan and Major Barry from the Salvation Army, who had helped them get a place, and, you know, it was becoming a social kind of organization where you came and you went to the meetings and then they got you a job and they found you some clothes. And Dan died out. He died from his, well, not from active addiction. He passed away. And he had a running partner, you know, a little junior sponsee. And her name was Ray Lopez. And she took over. And she got hooked into the New York City system. And they had, like, an office. And it was the Narcotics Anonymous office. But it was also the New York Drug Authority office. And, you know, there's all this crossover stuff. And eventually the NA died in New York. The people in California tried to get in touch with them. And there was some connection between the two groups. There was also meetings started in Chicago, and they had 13 steps. The 13th step was God help me. And when you read their literature, it just doesn't sound like, you know, it sounds kind of like NA, but not really, you know. And then when you pick up the earliest writings that we have, dated from our fellowship, it sounds what we read today. In 1953, there was a guy named Jimmy Tennant and several other members. Jimmy had 3 years clean at the time. He was going to AA. And this is a picture of him from, this was at the World Convention in New York in 1983, and I believe he had about 43 years clean there. Well, it's the 30th anniversary, yeah, so he had 33 years clean. Jimmy and some other people got together with a desire to form something for addicts. And they had meetings going for a little while in California because there was also a penal system in Texas. There was another one of those, you know, federal facilities. And these were dumping people out, and had gone to some 12-step meetings in these places, and they were starting to be dumped back out into the communities. They had something called HFD meetings, which were habit-forming drugs, and all these meetings were underground. You know, it's like they didn't advertise, and you didn't, you know, and you had to sneak over there. Because back then, if you were an addict and you were grouped with other addicts, you got busted. And the cops would stake these meetings out. So that line about, you know, we are under no surveillance, not. These people got together, and on August 17th, they had a business meeting, and they wrote out bylaws, and they took minutes of this business meeting, and these are the minutes of that first business meeting. These are, of course, Xerox copies. And they talk about a committee of six, and it had all the people's names on it, meeting at Stagg Street at 8 p.m. for the purpose of organizing an AA group. And their first motion was that they were going to call the meeting, they were going to call it the San Fernando Valley AANA. And Jimmy was the chairperson at the time, and he said, called them out of order. He said, you can't do that. AA World Services won't let you. And he was voted down. He said, I had the dubious luxury of being voted out of the first business meeting in Narcotics Anonymous, the first motion. And, of course, he was right. And they wrote to AA World Services and got a letter back a few weeks later. And it's in the minutes that they got this letter back and said they couldn't use, they could adapt the 12 steps, but they couldn't take the name. So they had a motion to change the name from San Fernando Valley AANA to Narcotics Anonymous. They met several other times, and in there it says, we take our purpose from the key. And what the key was a newsletter from the federal penitentiary detox facility in Lexington. It was their newsletter, and it was where they had all the information about NA, and they were mailing that out to people. And what happened, what it was about was that they made a commitment to meet for 1 year. These people made a commitment that they would meet every Wednesday night for 1 year, agreeing that one recovery would be significant. I mean, think of how many tens of hundreds of thousands of addicts are clean today because those people made a commitment. Because it's just one person got clean. The early years of NA are real interesting. One of Jimmy's biggest things, and that he always talked about, and I refer back to Jimmy a whole lot because he was the guy who stuck it out. He stuck it out all the way to the end. Whenever NA fell down, Jimmy would pick it up. In the early 70s, when you called Narcotics Anonymous, you got Jimmy's kitchen. He had the World Service office at his house, and everything he did, all his time was spent in carrying the message to addicts all around the world, selflessly, tirelessly, for little or no money. In my heart, I consider him the founder. You know, there's other people, and he never really wanted to be known as the founder of NA. Jimmy's biggest argument throughout the years was there's no big shots here. You know, he said this has to be a group thing, it has to be a we thing. See, in the early, the 50s, there was a lot of controlling personalities, and they would take over, and they would run the show. And NA ended up in a treatment center in the late 50s. It was a dryout center in California called the Schreier's Dryer. It was called the Schreier's Dryer. And they had the NA meeting there, and what they had was a show of hands meeting. Well, when I first read that, I assumed they meant you raise your hand and they pick on you, right? A show of hands meeting is that they raise their hands and they say how many alcoholics are in the room, how many addicts are in the room. If they had more alcoholics, they had an AA meeting. If they had more addicts, they had an NA meeting. So at the end of 1959, one of the women who, you know, one of the early member NA members went over to this place to see what was going on, and there was no meeting. And there was no literature, and there was no funds left. And this was the last NA meeting that was available. So if you read in some of our history, it says NA as such disbanded. That's exactly what happened. And this woman went back to Jimmy and crying in tears and said, well, what do we do, Jimmy? And he said, well, first we go get a cup of coffee. And then we go and we start the meeting up again, and we put the traditions on the wall. You know? And we run the meeting by the traditions. And they moved along and slowly started to grow in different places. Jimmy did a lot of 12-step work. He sent white books out to all the praise Jesus. It's a Narcotics Anonymous Convention or Revival. I can't figure. He sent out little white books to all the libraries, and my sponsor, my first NA sponsor, was in Memphis, Tennessee. He had 2 years clean in AA. He was on lithium, and he was smoking pot and getting ready to pick up his two-year cake and thinking, this isn't working, you know. So he went to the libraries and asked them if they had something on addiction, and the guys said, you know, late said, well, we have this thing called Narcotics Anonymous. We have an address and we have a phone number. You know, I'm being a good addict. He said, well, screw the address, give me the phone number. And he called Colette. And, you know, big joking. And Jimmy accepted the phone call. And Jimmy talked to this guy every day for a month, accepting his calls. And he talked to him about starting a meeting. And he talked to him about complete abstinence. And he said, we don't take nothing here. A day at a time. He said, legal or otherwise, prescribed or otherwise. He said, and you go start a meeting. And Jimmy told my sponsor, he said, and you go and you hug everybody who comes in the door. He said, regardless of how they smell or what their dress is or what their socioeconomic background is, he said, because if you're not willing to hug everybody, he said, you won't stay clean and neither will they. He said, and if you've got it in the back of your mind that you're going to get in their wallet or you're going to get into their pants, he said, you won't make it and there'll never be another clean addict in Memphis, Tennessee. My sponsor was ready to surrender to those beliefs and to trust this guy. And he got clean and he started the first meeting in Memphis, Tennessee. And they have meetings all over Tennessee today. And that same scenario happened in England and in Germany and in Australia. And all over the world, because this man took the time to talk to these people, the mail and stuff. You know, and the biggest thing about Jimmy was he was a man. He was a human being, and he was an addict. You know, and so, you know, there was times when there was regions wouldn't get their stuff because he was busy helping one little guy over here. You know, he was one individual, and he had personality. And as he grew older, he was very ill for a long time, and that colored a lot of the things that happened. In the early 70s, I'm going to jump on, there was a guy, an addict from Atlanta, Georgia, named Bo S., and he had 5 years clean. Atlanta had, they were up to 7 meetings a week. This was about 1978, I believe, somewhere around there, 77. And people were talking about an NA book, and, you know, where's our book, who's writing our book, you know, when's this book going to get done? And so they decided to send him out to the World Convention in California to find out who's writing our book. And Bo flew out there, and, you know, his first question, he was on a quest, right, a mission. He started walking around asking everybody. Well, they would hand them to, you know, Jack B., the board trustee chair, and Jack handed them over to Jimmy K., and Jimmy... He eventually got handed to Greg Pierce, and Greg was the director of the World Service Office. He was the president of the head of Parent Service Corporation back then. It was like the manager kind of thing. Not the manager, but the board of directors chair. And Greg was the only person that was really collating or trying to get something done with literature. And Bo said, you know, who's writing our book? Well, Greg had this famous reply. He'd say to people, you're writing the book, write it down. And Bo, of course, said, I already have. I've got a bunch of pages. And this was, you know, this is my version. But there was a response there that there was somebody who was already doing something and who was dedicated. And they started talking. And they got up to walk, and Bo figured, you know, the guy was just being nice, and, you know, he said, when I turn right, Greg turned right. And when I turn left, Greg turned left. He said he realized this guy just wasn't blowing him off. He really wanted to know who he was and talk with him. And they ended up going up to a room and talking for hours. Bo stayed over and went to Greg's house, met his wife and kids, and went back home with a dedication to do something. Bo went to Atlanta, and he sent Greg a postcard about 4 or 5 months later. It was just a little postcard, and it's so meaningful. It just said, you know, Dear Greg, Merry Christmas, send my love to the wife and kids, and it said, P.S., guess who bought a typewriter? And that typewriter has typed out hundreds of pages of the basic text. Bo was writing back and forth, and some, I guess Greg sent him a letter saying, you know, why don't you write a letter to the fellowship? And Bo said, well, I'm not a anybody. And he said, oh, yes, you're on the Board of Trustees World Literature Committee. You know, he said, oh, I am? Okay. And all of a sudden he had a title, you know. So he wrote a letter asking people to send in input, and he came out to California for the World Service Conference, and he was elected the World Literature Chair. And Greg used to tell, you know, he did a breakdown of the people that participated in writing the basic text. There was 4 main people that were behind the scenes, or, you know, at the core. And Bo was at the front, and he talked. Language that any addict could read it and identify. That sober might be too limiting because, you know, addicts who drank might understand that, but somebody just shot dope might say, doesn't make sense to me. Okay. So they started to come up with terminology like clean and addiction and that kind of stuff. Someone was talking about the growth of NA. There's a direct result not only on the writing of the basic text, but the, you know, that the basic text came out, but the work that was done to put the book out. Because what happened was they had world literature conferences around the world, around the country, and at these conferences, people would come from isolated little places, and they'd sit in a room with people who were coming up with a concept of addiction that we all understood. And they were coming, and they were talking about concepts like only going to NA for your recovery. Because back then, NA was that other meeting you went to enhance your AA recovery. It was a place where you could go talk about drugs. Of course, when a bunch of addicts get together and talk about drugs, we get fucked up. These people were getting together and talking about recovery. And they were talking about the focus. And the people who came to these workshops were learning and growing, and they were going back to their home areas, and they were disseminating this information. What happened was they had 5 lit conferences, and it was amazing stuff that happened to write this book, and I guess that's basically what I'm going to do is talk about this book, and then I'll go real brief through the other, but I'm going to focus on this. What they did was at the first one, they didn't know how they were going to write it. They decided, they made a group conscious that they would take the headings out of a little white book, and those would be their chapter headings. You know, why are we here, how it works, all that stuff. And then they realized that they could take every piece of literature they had, and they could cut it up into little thoughts and sentences and paragraphs. And they did that. They cut all this stuff up, and then they put it all into piles that fit. You know, this is about recovery relapse. Okay, we'll put it in there. This is about why are we here. We'll put it in there. And they got all these piles together, and then they took all these piles of little pieces of paper, and they started pasting them together and trying to fit them together where they would work. And then they'd write little stuff in between it, and that's how the basic text was written. You know, it's a cut-and-paste job. Exactly. You know, there's some amazing stuff that happened during the writing of the text. This friend of mine from California was typing out one of these final cut-and-paste forms, and he was typing this line that said, "We dreaded the past and we were fearful of the future." And he typed in, "And we weren't too thrilled about the present." And it's part of the literature. It never got changed. There was a wonderful girl, Gina, from Nashville, who wrote the line, "Everything we know is subject to revision, especially what we know about the truth." And she was one of the first NA members to die from the disease of AIDS. In the last workshop they had, Greg had written the tradition. Greg had written the traditions portion of the basic text, and was supposed to come down. They were going to fly him down to. You know, go over the stuff and to type it out. And the people were so anxious, they had been going so fast that they decided they couldn't even wait for him to get on an airplane to get there. So they decided to transcribe the tradition portion of the basic text. And they did a phone call from Oregon to Memphis. And they had a woman, and Bo sat next to this woman and held the phone to her ear. And this woman was a really fast typist. And Greg was reading, and he was editing his writings as he was reading them out to this woman, and she was typing them out. And Bo said he just sat there and watched page after page the 12th edition portion of the text come out. And he said he was sitting there for a while and getting kind of tired, and somebody stuck a chair under his butt and sat there. And you know, he figured it was, you know, an hour or so. And he looked at his watch when they were done, and they'd been transcribing for 4.5 hours. From like 1 a.m. to 5 in the morning, they transcribed the tradition portion of the basic text. And the amazing thing is that the tradition portion was handed over to the Board of Trustees to Group Conscience and do the final review, and they basically gave it back just the way it had been given to them. That the way Greg had written it was exactly the way it came out into our literature. Yeah. Greg died about 3 weeks ago from cancer of the liver. And he's a giant that will be greatly missed. He wrote the first service structure that we ever had. It's called the NA Tree. And he got to actually see it happen and see it unfold and become a world service guy. He wrote a triangle of self-obsession one day when he was self-obsessed. He wrote the tradition portion of our basic text. He wrote the IP Another Look. And he spent 28 years of his life dedicated to Narcotics Anonymous. And he sponsored all 4 of the key players who wrote the basic text. help write the basic text. The basic texts weren't written by these four people. They were written by hundreds of people. Hundreds of people gave countless hours to write this book. They gave it in workshops. They gave it in regional literature committees. They traveled hundreds of miles for these workshops to do them. At the end of the message, they got together, some people stuck around, and they came out with this. And this was the first rough draft of the Basic Text of Narcotics Anonymous. It's called a grade book. And they said they had about 1,200 addresses that they had found. But they called all over the country to find addresses. And they would call like local treatment centers and AA groups. And they had this one guy calling all around the world, this guy Roger from New York, and to try to find every address that he could. They found the address in Ireland, and they sent it. And years later, Joseph got to meet this girl who had gone to the post office box and found this in it. Another guy, Mario from Australia, was getting clean in the treatment center down there, and the treatment center had received a copy of this, and he had grabbed it and said, "This is cool." This was boiled down. Everybody was asked to send input in on this, and the neat thing about the gray book is that each page has a number down each line, and there's a number down at the bottom of the page, and so that you could put input in and say, like on page 27, line 15, change this to that. In the back, there's a chronology of significant events in NA. It's like a timeline. And they had a thing in there called the physician's viewpoint, because the AA had a physician's viewpoint in their book, and this one didn't make it. This is from a guy, Doug Talbot, who was a recovering doctor in Georgia. And there was a Spanish who, what, how, and why in here as well. All this stuff was boiled down into two sections. This was a white approval form of the basic text. It's called a white floppy, and this is actually a copy of one. The original had a slick cover to it, and this is the first thing that I ever saw bigger than a white book. And I thought this was really cool because as soon as I got it, I made 40 copies of it. Didn't know you weren't supposed to do that, but and you know, hand them out to everybody. And the second I got this piece of literature, I put down my AA big book and I started reading this. Oh, thank you. Let's have a hand for my humility. You're supposed to vote yes or no on this book, and my group did group conscience. We said yes, cool. We voted yes. The other half is the steps portion, and it came in a little mailer like this. And this was all the ones that are used in the book that they had copyrights for. They could, a couple people they couldn't track down and get a copyright release, so they didn't get put in there. Yes, ma'am. And these things were voted on to approve as the first edition of the Basic Text of Narcotics Anonymous. When the approval went through, they came out with something called a Red Limited Edition, first edition. And this I bought from my sponsor at the Fourth East Coast in 1984. And each book was numbered, and it says NA First Edition in it. Between the time that this book was approved and this book was printed, Jimmy Cannon had a problem with a couple of the lines in the tradition, and called in the chair of the board of trustees, the director of the World Service Office Board, and you know, the head of the conference, and had a group conscience on making a change in here. And the traditions were the second and ninth tradition, I believe it is. One tradition says that service boards, the fourth, thank you. One tradition says that service boards and committees cannot decide, rule, dictate, or censor. Well, a service board committee decided, ruled, and dictated to censor that part. And the other one is about, it says, what about our service boards, our committees? Are these things NA? And in that white approval form that I voted in my home group, it says, no, these things are not NA. They are services that a group may or may not choose to utilize. Well, if you look at your basic text today, it says, what about these service boards, these committees? It says, these are services a group may or may not choose to utilize. The line, these are not NA, was taken out by this service board. In my mind, I think it should have been in there, but that's me, you know, because it puts service in a different light, okay? Narcotics Anonymous is that meeting that meets on Tuesday night in the group that runs it. Everything else is outside of that, what is Narcotics Anonymous. It takes the ego out, you know? There was a lot of battles and back and forth, and it was voted to put it back in, the lines back in, so they had a second edition where it was put back in. There's a second edition with the paste up where they actually pasted it in there. And then there was a motion to return the basic text to its original form. The original form that most of us thought they were talking about was with the second and the fourth and ninth edition, like we voted. And somehow, this is the way I was told, was that the motion got dopeed and then it came out with, this is the original form, the one that we first printed. We came out with a third edition, and then we changed from recovering, and then we changed a little white book, so we came out with a third edition revised. We voted to change the basic text for grammar, syntax, punctuation, and spelling, and so we came out with a fourth edition. And when they went to do that, they screwed up when they were typing the thing in, the draft in, because the person was losing, they were writing, and there's so many parts of the text that say the same thing different ways, and they'd say, you know, we are addicts who suffer, and then about four paragraphs down, they'd say, we are addicts who are suffering. Well, the person who was typing looked away and came back and missed all four paragraphs and kept typing. So there was many sections that were just dropped. So we came out with the fifth edition. Throughout the tables, and you can feel free to walk around and check those out, we have, you can't take any of it. It's my stuff. But we have copies of all different things from all the different versions of It Works, How, and Why, which we used to kindly refer to as It Sucks, We, and Them. There were so many different versions of that. The original problem behind that was that the office manager and people in World Lit decided that we should spend $100,000 of fellowship money, $50,000 of fellowship money to hire a professional writer to write the literature, not write it, but to collate it all and put it into one voice. It sounded pretty cool, but the writer had over 10 years in AA and wrote a very negative, condescending tract, and it got voted down. And it went through several different phases to get to where it is today. We've got the first year of the NA Way magazine. We have original newsletters from before we had the NA Way. We had a newsletter called The Mainline, which I thought was cute. The NA News and The Voice, which was our newsletter before the NA Way. There's a lot of early editions of literature in different languages. There's flyers from different conventions around the world and early world convention flyers. There's coffee mugs from early world conventions and from the World Service Office. And that's all I have to share. Thanks.
I'm Chris, and I'm still an addict. Anyway, thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Kermit. Thanks for showing up, you guys. Feel free to look around. It's been very, very good time. And enjoy yourself the rest of the weekend. That's all we got. Let's close with the wee version of the Serenity Prayer.
God has the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage. He's got a joke book.
One of the guys founded my original home group.
Right.
Went to California and had Jimmy Kaper sponsor for a while.
Yeah,
and
right.
Brought that basic text that's addressed to our group. Talks about the time capsule. Not a lot of people know it, but there's a time capsule that's buried. It's supposed to be brought back for 50 years from 53. Well, in Ada, somewhere. But it talks about the time capsule. And he addressed it to New Attitudes, named the group, and signed it. We still got it. That copy of the basic text.
See, Greg brought me all his archives, and it was the most amazing stuff you've ever seen. There was a box of SIG that's got manila envelopes, and it says, each envelope says, why are we here, final draft, how it works, final draft, World Duke Real, final draft. Which is like,
right.
I'm like, shit, you know? And but of all the stuff, that was the thing that impressed me more than anything else. The hand signature, obviously, and hey, his signature.
Yeah. And then there's a lady from around the peak area that I can't remember her name. John. Him. I'm here with her. He knows her. She brought her archives to our last Mocanary convention.
Oh, really?
And man, she just had so much stuff that blew me away. I did not know. One person had it.
Right.
And she has just got boxed stuff.
Joseph told me a long time ago, you're the archive, save everything. We all start to hear this.
Yeah.
You know?
We all kept out the stuff that we had across.
Right.
I'm lucky to have
enough. I'm still working.
You can get it. Joe Joke was in 2000 Live. We should have come out with a black and blue.
The black and blue version. Took so many versions.
That's how it felt like after it was done. Yeah. And if you don't have the position,
No. I've got the 12 now. You know. And I really should have taken more time. But
I got
out of blue light, black and white.
I mean, black and white. Yeah.
Purple.
I
mean, the sad thing is that the purple is the group.
Yeah.
I don't know why they thought that they,
Okay. We got the purple form and the blue one, got the top, we got the white one, and the time is the input is all part of the life, the white one.
And the other challenge that they talked about was that they went around to people with lines on putting time to interview. Well, people have been clean back in 20 years, they're recovering AA in their early days, and that's a lot of their step work and, you know, that kind of stuff. And if you want to focus that she understood, and she was picking up on what she had, you know?
No, you're